So sitting here, I find myself wondering how you're doing, how you are, both just right here now in this situation and equally in your lives. I don't necessarily know too much. A few, I know a little more. What goes on here? And I don't know to what extent you came along today because it was a convenient day in your life to do something like this, or whether the theme in particular interested or engaged you. But it's something that for me has always been, I think, a topic close to my heart. And I'm aware in the context of this day that I always feel like I could really be talking for half the day just about the meditation itself, let alone a particular theme that for me comes out of that. And so clearly not everything that might be said will be said, because otherwise there'd be a lot of talking and not much time for meditation. But for me, the theme to contemplate or to reflect, what does it mean to be part of it all? What does it mean to realize our non-separateness from the world around us, to understand really deeply that we are not different, not other than, not separate from all of this that we call everything, in fact, or the world. And I'd invite you to listen when you listen to what I'm offering, not necessarily just with trying to analyze or to organize the information or the suggestions, the reflections, but to actually let yourself feel your body and feel, and in a way be sensitive just to what your responses are without needing to make anything of them, neither to take hold of nor to push away what your responses might be. Spiritual teachings and practices, as I said in the beginning of the day, are really intended to support us to understand what is most true. And in understanding what is most true and real in our lives and in this world, to be able to live in accordance with that truth. So far as we don't really understand how things are, we find ourselves in disharmony or conflict, or feeling somehow out of sync with life or with ourselves. And it's a painful, challenging experience that I think is all too common. It's certainly one that I've known at times in my life deeply and have been challenged by. So when we look at our experience in meditation, often we're invited to reflect on the inner experience of thoughts and feelings, of images and ideas, and all of what goes on that we call our past, our history, or what we imagine and believe may be our future, to see that all of these things do not ultimately define us, that these are experiences passing through the space of consciousness, passing through the aliveness of this moment. And it's equally true to say, and equally important to understand, that everything that is around us cannot be held apart from us. For myself, in my own journey, the whole sense of spirituality, before I really even knew what that word was or what it might have meant, has been based in a deep sense of concern for living things, for life, for the real profound impact of the experience that I imagine you all know, that we're affected by our lives, we're affected by things around us, we're touched by what happens or doesn't happen. And that if we look and if we give some consideration to this, we see that we equally affect, we touch, we impact the world around us, we impact others, we impact this living world. And so there's a way in which we, in being affected by and affecting the world and others, are in a relationship with all of that. And that relationship is one which, when we really look at it carefully, I think we start to see that the relationship is so close and ultimately so intimate that we cannot really say that there is something else, other, out there that is other than what we truly are. It's interesting to just look at how we think, because we think, and we think a lot, most of us. There's anyone who doesn't recognize the fact that we think quite a bit. Anyone who didn't notice a couple of thoughts, or maybe three or four even, in the last, meditation period. Thinking is really interesting, because thinking tends to label experiences or events or situations or things in very kind of distinct ways, and it's useful and it has a function for that. It enables us to organize our day and, you know, make sure we have breakfast and things like that. But it doesn't necessarily always provide us the most valuable basis for understanding. So, having said that, of course, there'll be some thoughts being offered in what I say. And yet sometimes there's a different way in which we know things. There's a different way in which we can understand things, which we might talk about more in terms of resonances. And that word, for me, speaks to the kind of knowing and understanding that we have at a more cellular or organic level that isn't just about what our intellect generates or organizes. So, again, that my invitation is to listen, maybe from that place of not just our minds, whatever that might mean for you. Because if we reflect on, you know, what it is that we are, if we look a little bit at it, and for me, you know, I often find myself referring to sort of school biology. Now, I'm no expert on biology, but even just in the simple things we probably all learned at school, even if we maybe didn't pay all that much attention some of the time. What's actually going on here? The bodies that we're sitting in, or that we think we're sitting in, they're made of food, aren't they? We know that. This is, you know, really annoying to come all this way to be told such obvious stuff, perhaps. But do we really know that? Do we really know that this tissue, this warm or cool or soft or hard textured material that we're feeling, that's telling us that we're breathing, do we really know that this is made of something that we found, or that we were given, or that was placed in front of us, that we put in our mouths, and we chewed up, and it became this thing? No? We all had, well, I don't know if we all had breakfast today, but probably we all ate something in the not-too-distant past, and we're wearing it right now, under our clothes. You know? What is it? Really, we are. We're dressed in our food, we could say. And of course, we breathe in this air. We do it all day. We've been doing it all our lives. Our lives are circumscribed by that reality from the first in-breath that comes in when we're born until the last out-breath leaves our body at the time of death. We're constantly interacting with this so-called external element that we imagine to somehow be not alive, because it's just air, or not to do with me, because it's out there, and yet we're drawing it into our bodies. You know, the breath we breathe in, that in this in-breath is in my lungs, but within a few moments the oxygen is in my cells. That oxygen was produced in the cells of trees and grasses and plants not that long ago. Some other
expression of life was wearing it, we could say. It was part of its cellular existence. Now, we know this. Again, this isn't a biology lesson. We know this. But do we really know what that means? Do we really know what that means? I mean, sometimes it's quite nice to think, oh, wow, we're breathing in the oxygen from the trees. How lovely. You might feel a nice sense of connection with trees. I find that sometimes quite easy. Of course, some of what we're breathing in is also what our neighbours breathed out just a few moments ago. Now, how is that to contemplate? Really? You know, we try and pretend that's not going on. You know, we cover our breath when we sneeze. It's good to cover your mouth when you sneeze, you know. But at the same time as we're doing that, we are breathing out into the same space from which our neighbours are breathing in. Do we understand the significance of that? We're breathing in from the same space that our neighbours are breathing out into. Some of the air that you're breathing in right now was breathed out by somebody else just moments ago. Some of that air only got as far as their lungs and didn't get absorbed, went out. But some of what you're breathing in was in the very cells of their body. It was in the very cells of their body. And some of what was in the very cells of your body is in the cells or in the lungs of somebody else's body right now. I mean, it's kind of intimate, isn't it? It's a little bit embarrassing, you know. We don't like to get that close normally. But we are. We always have been doing this. You know, we're dependent on the warmth of the sun, the support of the earth. All of this we couldn't be here without. And if we can't exist without it, how do we imagine ourselves to be separate from it or different from it? This body. So much a part of nature is to be ultimately indistinguishable from anything around us. I mean, when we think about, what is it really here, this body? Now, I often find it useful just to reflect on it. Again, the basic biology, it's a hollow tube with some appendages. That's what it is. It's a hollow tube with some appendages, mostly designed for getting food to put in the tube and to getting away from something that wants to put us, thinking of us as food, into their tube. Yeah, that's it. And then we've got a bit on the top for figuring out which bit is food and which bit wants to make me into food. There's a couple more bits for making more tubes. And that's basically it. At a certain level, that's the physical reality in simple terms. And of course, we feel like this is me in here. Of course, we do, naturally, understandably. There's a certain truth to that. But there's also a certain deception that we get fooled by in that, because we feel like it's me in here, but, you know, what's in here? Oh, it's a tube. It's quite a long tube. It's coiled up a bit in the middle. It's a long tube. And, of course, if we say that's on the inside, what's inside the tube? It's what we were eating a little while ago, some time ago. And actually, once we've eaten it, it might have looked quite good on the plate. Once we've eaten it, you know, that's definitely not me. You know, if any of it comes out, we think, no thanks. You know, it's interesting how embarrassing it is, that stuff that's inside the tube. It's okay when it's in there. When it comes out in either direction, we don't like it. We keep it well hidden. We don't talk about it too much. Definitely not in Dharma talks. But this is us. And yet the bit on the inside isn't really me. It's on its way out. Some of it gets absorbed into what we call my body. But this body does all that without us. Have you noticed that? You know, maybe we're required, and in fact, it's pretty helpful if we might participate in that process of putting the food in here. But once we put it in here, everything else happens by itself. Have you noticed that? The breathing goes on. We don't do it. We don't make it happen. It's really useful that we don't have to pay attention to our breath in order for it to happen. Have you noticed? You know, if any of you weren't mindful for 3 minutes, what would have happened? Easily done. The breathing just happens. There's something in this organic intelligence that does that. Digestion happens, gestation happens, growing a body. It just happens. We don't get to choose what happens. Growing another body, sometimes that happens. That's even more amazing. I can't do that with this body. But, you know. But it's something that can happen. And somehow, as human beings, we have come to imagine that we're somehow separate from all of this. Because exactly this is going on in every single body and collection of cells, into tissues and organs and what we call organisms, whether big ones or little ones. Those same basic things are happening. And that same basic exchange is going on between the environment that's called outside and the organism that's called inside. All that's going on. It's happening continuously. And of course, at some point, these organisms become, again, part of the environment. You know, ashes to ashes, dust to dust. If you take the water away from this thing, it's a little pile of dust. It's a little pile of dust. Now that's, for me, that's amazing. Not because it's, you know, about to happen necessarily, though of course we don't know, but because it's saying something about the basic constituent of our existence. And that's just at that physical level, of course, the biology. Where we say, you know, am I in here? Is it mine? Is it me? One of the things in Dharma practice we realize is we can't find it somewhere. We can't find a me in this because there isn't something separate from all of this that is me. There's just this, which we can know, which we can experience. But somehow we're very deeply wedded to the idea that there's somehow a me in here who has a body, or perhaps is a body, who is somehow different than everything else, somehow apart from it all. And the effect, the impact in our life of living in this way is really painful. It's one of the perhaps deepest and most painful things we can encounter in our experience. That sense of being different, of being separate, of being apart from. And the way in which we've come, it seems many of us in our culture, to, or at times in ourselves, to kind of see the world of nature. There's something different than the human world. So there's something really important about considering this, reflecting on this. What is it to spend time in the natural world? What is it to contemplate nature? It's the word we use for this. One of the things that strikes me about being in the natural world, and it's something I find a really important and nourishing practice, as well as something enjoyable and lovely, is that it's really big. Have you noticed? You know, skin it, you know. Sorry if I'm going to tell you a lot of really obvious things here. It's really large, the natural world. It's like our mind can't really easily stretch out and kind of wrap around the experience of it. We can make an idea, you know, about it, but the actual experience is vast. And so I'll just give you a way in which one might have a sense of that, and you might have some opportunity to practice this if you feel so moved to just imagine yourself lying on the ground in a clear, starlit night, looking up at the sky. Just imagine what that would be like. And as we look up at
the stars and the darkness of the night sky. What would it be in that moment? We think, oh yeah, it's the sky. Yeah. Yeah, you've seen that before, it might be lovely. Yeah. If we were just to contemplate for a moment that rather than lying on the earth looking up at the night sky, we were in fact suspended on the bottom of the earth, suspended above this vast empty space, which is below us, and which by some remarkably fortunate and inexplicable thing called gravity, we're not falling into it. Now, this isn't just a sort of a funny idea, because from where I come in New Zealand, this is the bottom. This is the bottom. We are on the bottom. And somehow we are hanging on, attached to this planet and not falling off into the, you know, to get some sense of the amount of space out there, we have to imagine what it will be like to be in it. And we can't really do that. But just to contemplate what it would be. Now, it's not going to happen, fortunately. There's this remarkable thing whereby things attract each other. That's what gravity is. Things attract each other. That's a simple expression of it. It doesn't explain it. It just describes it. Things attract each other. And fortunately, we're therefore close enough, or we're in this case close enough to something which attracts us that provides a pretty hospitable environment for us. But if we weren't here, if we were out there, it'd be cold. And there wouldn't be any air to breathe. We wouldn't last very long. We know that. We know that. The amount of space is beyond what our minds can handle. So we tend to shrink back from it. We tend to shrink into something that we can kind of think about, like, oh, this room, and there's a roof, so even if gravity stopped, we'd get, you know, we could catch ourselves up there. It's okay, we're safe. If we contemplate the vastness of the universe, one thing we might sense is that we're actually really quite insignificant. All our great importances. You know, we're here for a flicker of time in a geological scale. A flicker of time, our existence. Even the whole of human existence is a flicker of time in the context of the cosmos. And there can be something that just, for me, is very usefully humbling in contemplating that. And at the same time, in contemplating that, what I find also becomes more obvious or apparent is how remarkable and how fortunate we are to be part of something that is this vast. To be part of it all. One of the interesting things about things that are really big, like, I mean, really, big is a good word, isn't it? It's a small word, it's a simple word, kids learn it pretty early on, but big, like really big. When something's really big, large, vast, one thing we don't do with it is look at it with our judgments. It's really interesting. No one that I know has ever looked up into the night sky, certainly no one's told me about it, and looked at it and thought, well, you know, I think it would be better if that constellation was over there, and, you know, it could be improved a bit, we need a bit more space over here, you know, those ones aren't quite bright enough, could we turn up, you know, the reds and the blues would be a bit preferable. You know, we don't think that way about things that are really big. When we make things small, when we think, I know what this is, it's one of these, and then we can immediately start to figure out ways to fix it or improve it. And that's what we do with ourselves. When we cut ourselves off, when we conceive ourselves as somehow separate from something much larger, we then start to look at how it needs to be fixed, improved, changed. And the urge to do that comes out of an underlying unease with the separateness that's being assumed. And that unease is inevitable in the assumption of separateness
Because it's untrue. And there's something in the untrueness of that that hurts in our hearts, that hurts in the very depths of our being.
And yet at other times, of course, what we can notice is that we're touched by the experience of things around us. Sometimes it requires a little space, a little slowing down, a little relaxing. It's often what we're really hoping for when we go on holiday. And equally what we're looking for when we engage in practice. It's what happens when we're not quite so defended, not quite so busy, and not so much in productive mode. We might just see something. It might be a small creature. It might be a leaf on a tree in the light of the dawn. Or it could be any number of things. It could just be the sound of a bird that just strikes us in a certain way. And what we notice is a certain kind of a resonance. And again, I trust and I'm confident that all of us have had these experiences in our lives, where something struck us in a way that felt it went right to our core. And while we couldn't say what it was that it did to us, or for us, or in us, what we know is that it spoke to us of something important. That it touched us in a way in which we maybe felt uplifted, or nourished, or moved, or connected, or not separate from. And it's like what we are is something incredibly permeable. But so easily in our struggle to survive and the challenges and the demands of our lives, we kind of harden up, we tighten up. And that hardening and that tightening starts to make us numb or relatively insensitive to the impact of life around us and within us, in such a way that we start to experience ourselves as if we're living in a cocoon, or as if we're living in a fortress, or as if we're living in somehow in a space that's limited and separate from, cut off and apart from what is around us. And in those moments when we're touched, when we're open, maybe, you know, when we walk on the grass, maybe sometimes it's just boring and it's like, what am I doing this for? You know, why are we walking back and forth? This is pointless and meaningless, you know? And that bit of us that wants to be doing something with a point and a meaning, and a point and a meaning has always got something to do with, in those terms, to do with the future. It's always got to do with producing or creating something for another time. It's not to do with what's here, with what's now. In those moments when we're not having a reaction to the maybe simplicity, or the ordinariness of what's happening, we might just notice that when we put our foot on the ground, and maybe if we've taken our shoes or our sandals off and taken the risk that it might be dirty or it might be uncomfortable when we put our foot on the ground, but actually let ourselves make direct contact, not mediated through leather and rubber and all those things that are designed to allow us to not have to actually pay attention. That's what they're really for. We can actually walk around without paying attention to our feet. As soon as you take your shoes off, you start inevitably, naturally, organically paying attention. We want to, because we feel how sensitive they are. And sometimes in that contact, again, we might just sense or feel what it is to touch the earth. Not as an idea. Not as an idea, but as a felt experience, as something that we know and that speaks to us. And that resonance, that way of knowing and experience that isn't of the intellectual or conceptual mind, this is really a pathway that we can open up that has the potential to reveal to us the deepest truths of our life and to release us from the bondage of separateness, from the pain and the distress and the fundamental dissatisfaction of imagining and believing ourselves separate from life.
So I'd just like to invite you to take a moment and notice for yourself how that lands. And so far as there's any sense of, oh yeah, it sounds good, because, you know, in a way it can just sound like nice ideas. And I'm not really interested in trying to convince you that it is or it isn't nice ideas or nice things. It's really not my concern here to talk you into believing what I'm saying. It doesn't work that way as far as I understand it. It's more like seeing if we can allow ourselves to just open any closed assumptions or certainties we might have in this territory. The sense of separateness or difference from, in a way where we feel cut off from, alienated from, disconnected from, it's something that runs very deep, and it's something we're also kind of quite defended against actually allowing ourselves to feel. And often the busyness of our lives and the drivenness of our lives, despite the fact that everyone I know seems to want to do less and slow down and have more space, including me at times, we find ourselves busier and doing more and having more useful, interesting, wonderful things to do or to engage with. It's like because as we do, we start to feel something that's not easy to feel. And it's the, in a way, the barrenness of a sense of disconnection or isolation or separation that is painful because it is fundamentally not true. And yet because it's painful, we turn away from it. We don't want to experience it. And so we come out of our immediate, intimate relationship with the direct experience into more the mind, the thinking, the activity, the busyness, the getting on with our real life in the real world, so we call it. And yet this inner life is always going on for us, whether or not we're conscious of it, whether or not we're sensitive to it. So it takes some courage and some patience to allow ourselves to feel more deeply into our life, to feel more deeply into our environment. And to sense what that might offer us here. So far as you might encounter in being here anything of this, where we might notice our loneliness. Such a common human experience, even amongst people, we can feel lonely. Or a sense of disconnection, of not feeling connected. I'm not trying to say you shouldn't be having that experience at all. But if we are, can we have the courage and the care and the deep respect for our life to let ourselves feel it, to become interested in it. Because it's saying, as all difficult experiences are saying, actually, we need to pay attention here. We need to get to know what's going on. We need to see what's actually true in this experience. And being in the natural world and finding where we for ourselves can connect with a sense of nature can be really helpful with that. So my invitation for you is when we go out to do the walking and when we have our lunch, which we'll be doing after the next period of walking, to really let yourself take note, or notice, perhaps is a better way of languaging that. Notice the trees, notice the grass, notice the earth, notice what's around you. Even the buildings and the concrete are part of all of this. And you know, we easily see all of that as somehow not natural. But it isn't so far away from it. It isn't so far away from it. I'll maybe say some more about that later. But if you feel like just lying down or sitting down on the earth and just touching it with your hand, not trying to make yourself feel that you're part of it, but just noticing what's it like. Or if you do feel different than this or separate from it, noticing what that's like. And seeing if you can let yourself be touched by that. Whatever is true for you in this is okay. It's perhaps part of the journey.
So take your shoes off if you're up for that. Well, stand and feel the wind for a few moments in your walking. What happens is if we just go out and try and do something like that, is it kind of like we're trying to have a certain kind of experience. So I'm hesitant to even talk about it. But actually, if you just go and do the walking and just notice what you notice, don't look for anything special, because it's not special. It's just so ordinary that we miss it. We're so busy looking for something special. It's so ordinary what I'm talking about here. And it's so close to us that we're at some level unconscious of it because we're so used to it that we don't even notice it's there. So let's take some time for some walking meditation. How long does the lunch preparation need?
It varies.
Okay. So, let's say we've got about half an hour of walking meditation and time also for those of you who are preparing lunch to go to the dining room and to do that. Thank you very much for offering that support. So when the bell rings, it will be time for lunch, and please enjoy taking some food and also taking a moment maybe to contemplate your food and the taking of food, the really blessing and good fortune we have that we have food at all, and not everyone does, we know that. And that this is part of our relationship to life. This taking of food, this becoming of food, or this food becoming what we are.